Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. So I want to talk about emerging infectious diseases, and I think we're on the 21st anniversary of a landmark Institute of Medicine report on this. Right. Can you tell us a little bit about what are the determinants of emergent and re-emergent diseases, and would you define the two major categories of emerging infectious diseases?
Okay. So the determinants are its adaptability to, one, infect a human, and two, importantly, sustain the transmissibility among human. Because if you look at new emerging infections, an interesting 70-plus percent are what we call zoonotic. That means they originate in an animal, jump species, and go to a human. Influenza is one of them. HIV is another one of them. You know, you can just go on and on. They start off in an animal, and they go to human. Some of them are just curiosities. They jump, they infect a few people, and they dead end. And every once in a while, you get something like HIV, which is a transforming global health phenomenon. So given that as a background, the kinds of emerging infections are one that is truly newly emerging and one that is re-emerging. So a truly newly emerging infectious disease is HIV/AIDS for sure. Nipah virus was another one of them. Influenza is interesting because influenza is both an emerging and re-emerging. It's re-emerging when each year it changes a little and you need a different seasonal flu. It's newly emerging when you get a brand new pandemic with a virus that you've never seen anything like it before. So that's the one that bridges that chiasm between truly newly emerging and re-emerging.
So, Doctor, throughout our conversation, you've mentioned drug-resistant TB, MRSA, malaria. All antibiotics, antiviral drugs have a weakness, an inherent weakness. Could you tell us what that weakness is? And then what are you doing to combat that consequence of drug resistance?
It's almost a fact of life that microbes, because of their replicative and mutational capability, adapt to whatever you throw at them, environmentally, drug-wise, immune system, what have you. So when you get an antibiotic or an antiviral and you treat someone, unless you completely eliminate that bacteria or that virus, you will naturally select for the mutation that is resistant to getting killed. So if you look at a virus, let's say you're infected with a virus, HIV, influenza, what have you, or a bacteria. It isn't one homogeneous microbe. It's a microbe that what we call quasi-species. There's a dominant component and a minor component. So when you treat and you treat the sensitive component and there's a mutation to become resistant, at the end of the day, if you're treating, you're going to be left with the resistant microbe. And that's what the microbe does to escape the antibiotic. And that's the reason why you hear a lot about it, and it's true. If you're going to use an antibiotic, you should use it appropriately. If you use it when you don't need it, you will inadvertently select for resistant microbes. So the overuse and inappropriate use of antibiotics is a surefire way to help the microbe select for resistance. The other is you need good diagnostic and hospital control practices because much of the antibiotic resistance that we see challenging us now, certainly in the United States, is things that take place in the hospital where people are there for long periods of time, they have weakened immune system, and they got a lot of antibiotics because they have complications. When you develop a resistant microbe at a hospital, you need good infection control processes to prevent the spread from one person to another so that you could keep it dead-ended in the person who gets it and hopefully successfully treat that person. So it's an inevitability of the interaction between the human host's use of antibiotics and antivirals to suppress the virus or the bacteria, and the virus and the bacteria's inherent replicative and mutational capability to avoid the bad things you're trying to do to them, namely kill them.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to turn to the allergy side of your portfolio, and in particular, the immune-mediated disorders that you deal with, like asthma, right. type 2 diabetes. Would you elaborate on this research? And more importantly, what advances have been made in understanding the pathogenesis of immune-mediated diseases and the strategies to prevent and treat them?
Okay. So if you look at immune-mediated diseases into two major buckets, one that's an inappropriate or aberrant function of the immune system, which directs itself against self. And that's why we call it autoimmunity. Because you're making an immune response not against a microbe that you're trying to kill. You're making it against your kidney or your liver or your brain or your skin or what have you. That's one type of an immune-mediated disease. Another is an immunodeficiency, congenital or iatrogenic, namely caused by physicians or some medication. So what we have been doing is trying to understand in the immunodeficient person who's congenitally immunodeficient, there's been a lot of advances in gene therapy where if it's a genetic basis of the immunodeficiency, you might be able to replace or replenish the defective gene. You don't have to do it completely, maybe just enough to get that person to being able to function. And some of the classic but rare immunodeficiencies, gene therapy has been successful. In fact, one of the most successful arenas of any gene therapy is in reconstituting immunodeficient children, mostly. The other larger field, numerically, is autoimmune diseases. And one of the most exciting approaches is what we call the induction of tolerance. Tolerance means that the immune system sees itself as different and would naturally want to make a response to get rid of it, just like it would want to get rid of a microbe. By tolerizing it, the word tolerant, you become tolerant to it. So you train the immune system. Instead of responding against it, you recognize it, but you don't respond. You're tolerant of it. And that's what's referred to as the induction of tolerance. That's a major area of research in autoimmunity that is showing some success, even, for example, with transplantation, where you give someone an organ transplant and you don't necessarily have to treat them with immunosuppressive drugs to prevent the rejection of that transplant. You can try and tolerize them to recognize the transplant as different, but not reacting against it.
So I want to talk to another part of your mission, which is bioterrorism defense. And what are you doing in that area? And more particularly, how has the research evolved since, say, 2001 from a one drug, a one bug kind of approach to a more flexible strategy?
Well, that's has been an evolution in strategy. And the evolution was after the anthrax attack, which came literally right on the heels of the 9/11 attack, which we didn't know what it was at the time. So in the early years following 2001 through mid-2000s, we were developing vaccines and drugs to be able to address those threats that we knew had already been produced. Then it became very clear that the potential for the use or misuse of microbes in biological warfare is so enormous, it's futile to try and make an intervention against any and every single potential microbe. So that's why we started to focus on what we call broad multi-use platforms, both for vaccines and for antibiotics and antivirals, so that you could have an antiviral that would be good against multiple different classes of viruses, that you could stockpile that instead of worrying about, well, I got to make an antiviral against the following 50 potential agents that could be used in bioterrorism. So it's been a transformation, and it's actually been good for the entire field of microbiology, because in the quest to protect and develop interventions against deliberately released microbes, we've come a long way to enhance our capability of responding to naturally occurring microbes.
What does the future hold for the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases? We will ask its director, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.